Welcome to the Retail Focus Podcast, a weekly collection of news, interviews, and information from the world of retail.
Welcome to this edition of the Retail Focus Podcast. I'm Trent Kling for Leighton Kling, doing the work behind the scenes and on social media. Coming up on today's show, we'll talk to Anthony Welter, the vice chairman at Deloitte LLP and also their U.S. consumer industry leader. We'll talk to him about the global state of the consumer tracker. We just got some updated information for March that we'll discuss with him about. We'll also look back at the last 12 months of the pandemic, what retailers learned, what they can glean from it going forward, and what Deloitte is telling retailers perhaps to pay attention to as we edge out of the pandemic and consumer anxiety wanes. In news, we'll talk about Meijer, rare sales numbers, kind of at least from them, and we'll talk about the passing of an up-and-coming leader, sadly, in the retail industry. A reminder that you can check us out on basically any podcast listening platform. If you like us, please do give us a rating. Those help others to find us. Additionally, you can check us out on social media, where Leighton's at, Retail Podcast, on both Twitter and Instagram. So, as I mentioned, we got a rare sales update from Michigan-based retailer Meijer, specifically regarding their past year of sales or their past year of pandemic sales, as they issued a news release about sales trends. Now, the news release itself isn't a rare portion. They issue press releases all the time about community events. Lately, it's been vaccine rollouts and such. However, it's very, very rare for the privately owned company with 256 stores to release any sales information, even when it's relative, as we got in this release, such as sales, for example, being up by a certain percentage in a particular category. Meijer plays all of their company info close to the vest. We actually talked to a former Meijer marketing chairperson about that on the show. It's coming up on 6 years ago now when we talked to Paul Smarto about that, but it's kind of tradition for Meijer. They don't release a lot of their information to the public, so we were excited to see this particular release hit our news feed. If you're unfamiliar with them, well, there's a reason for that. I mentioned they have 256 stores, most of them clustered to the upper Midwest, where they are a staple, not really in other areas of the country, but most of their stores are their super centers. And to give you a little retail history, in fact, when the Walton family was looking into the Walmart Hypermart concept, which of course predated their superstores at Walmart, the family actually kind of scoped out Meijer stores to see how exactly they did it. So Meijer, kind of the originator in this space and played a large part in retail history, even though they haven't spread out so much throughout the country like someone like Walmart, for example, has. Now, Meijer, to begin the release, they noted that use of home delivery and pickup services have doubled during the last year for them. Not a surprise here. And in fact, some of these things aren't going to be that much of a surprise if you've been listening to the podcast regularly over the last 12 months. During the last 12 months, by the way, they did put a number as far as their shop and scan technology use. It was used 100 million times by customers. And that's similar to programs that Walmart and Kroger that allow customers to scan products into their cart as they go through, about 100 million times throughout those 256 full-line stores. As far as product sales trends, many were pretty typical of what we've seen during the pandemic shopping. There were some important items of note in grocery, particular something that hasn't really been mentioned from the likes of Walmart, for example, is grab-and-go and ready-to-eat product sales. Those were certainly up in grocery for Meijer. They noted sushi in particular as a subcategory that saw growth. And, you know, this makes logical sense. You look at a retailer like Walmart, no sushi there. Sushi locations in a lot of Kroger stores, but Meijer, of course, pretty well known for their sushi in the upper Midwest. This makes sense here. People not frequenting restaurants, sushi, something that is tougher to make at home, requires specialized techniques, equipment, ingredients, at least to make it well. You can make, of course, a basic version of sushi, maybe without those things, but to make it well, you need those techniques, the equipment, the ingredients, and so instead people were flocking to the sushi counter at Meijer. Meijer also said that there was a correlation they found between wait times going up for takeout and delivery as the pandemic went on, and the sales of the grab-and-go offerings. As wait times went up, sales for the grab-and-go offerings also went up, as customers may be less willing to wait 45 minutes for that DoorDash order. In some areas, Meijer stores carried pre-made meals provided by local restaurants. We talked about HEB doing the same thing last summer, and that added to momentum certainly in the ready-to-eat product sales category. However, sales still strong here in the category, even with the opening of most restaurants in Meijer's footprint, even with vaccines beginning to be rolled out. In fact, they sold 500,000 rotisserie chickens last month in March alone. Now, that number, for example, for rotisserie chickens is probably a bit small if you're a Walmart store looking at it. But again, you've got 256 stores there. You're selling 500,000 rotisserie chickens amongst those 256 stores. So sales there are high. They are expected to continue to be high throughout the course of 2021. Of course, food prep materials and food storage sales were also up to accommodate the increase during the pandemic in cooking at home and also having to store those leftovers from the ready-to-eat products that Meijer was selling. Now, as far as wellness trends were concerned, supplement sales were up. Hand weights and other exercise equipment also saw a boost. Sales of citrus fruit were also up year over year. Now, citrus is something where, you know, the entirety of produce, we should mention, had a pretty good year when you look at the year of the pandemic, or at least the year to date of the pandemic, March 2020 through March 2021. Produce sales in grocery stores, in general merchandise retailers, those have been up. Citrus sales, though, were something that was specifically called out by Meijer's leadership in this release. And retailers haven't really brought it up as of late, but they were certainly noted as being strong by many during March and April of last year. Seems for Meijer that momentum has continued throughout the year. People paying a little bit more attention to that vitamin C content, but also, again, people eating more at home, and as a result, they're buying a lot of produce. As a whole, produce sales took place via bagged quantities more so than previous years. That's something that was noted last summer by the magazine Produce Retailer as being a definite trend that retailers and packers were seeing. Other fitness products, I mentioned hand weights, but yoga mats, exercise straps, curl bars, all joined hand weights in being up 300% in sales year over year. So fitness, a big category, certainly for Meijer. Home furnishing sales were up, no surprise here. Throw pillows were something that was particularly called out. However, and again, this is where regionality comes into play. Given Meijer's more northerly orientation, they did see a 50% rise in thermal curtains and weighted blankets versus last year. Of course, the suggestion there is certainly that people trying to keep heating costs down, being home so often throughout the course of the winter, they're in northern climates, they're trying to get things that keep their house warm. But something Meijer also noted regarding thermal curtains is customers were using those to keep the light out of their offices as they were on video calls. So kind of an interesting tertiary effect, if you will, from the work from home phenomenon. Bed pillows also flew off the shelves, more than 1 million sold, far more than previous years for Meijer. Anti-light goods also saw double-digit percentage increases in 2020 versus 2019. So far in 2021, pillows are up double digits once again. Meijer expects that to continue throughout the course of 2021. They're seeing white product sales go up or continue to stay up. Work from home, of course, being more permanent versus prior to the pandemic, and they're finding people stocking up on pillows for that reason, because a lot of people using their laptops apparently while in bed rather than in their offices. I can't say I'm one of those people. That would drive me absolutely crazy and probably cause multiple visits to the chiropractor. One other home furnishing item that they mentioned of note, candle sales were up 160% year over year. And that's not a category we've heard called out for other retailers. The likes of Walmart and Target haven't really mentioned them. The dollar stores, Dollar Tree, Dollar General, they haven't really mentioned candles either. The only time we've heard candle momentum being mentioned is for Bath and Body Works, who, of course, just killed it during the course of the pandemic, even with their closures early on in the days of the pandemic. Finally, video game adjacent sales were up. Board games and puzzles had a banner year for them. Sales for bikes, pools, and grills also all up significantly over the past several years. So we're not just talking about 2020 over 2019 here. We're talking historic years for these products, according to Meijer. Grill sales may have helped an adjacent category we'll talk about momentarily, but also there was an over 60% boost year over year in fishing gear sales as customers turned to that hobby to pass time. Of course, fishing, a predominant hobby in Meijer's main footprint. You look at the likes of Michigan and Wisconsin and Illinois, fishing very, very popular in those states. Now, Meijer not only holds those 256 supercenters and grocery stores that I mentioned, not all of their stores are supercenters. Some of the older ones are grocery only. And if you include the smaller one in downtown Grand Rapids, of course, a grocery only store there, it's only about 25,000 square feet. But there are a fair number of Meijer Express convenience stores that are adjacent to their stores. And many of these, where they were allowed to do so, they stayed open 24/7 during the pandemic. As a result, they reaped in-store sales benefits, even as gasoline sales tailed off. Part of this was because Meijer stores themselves, but other retailers as well, curtailed hours. This sent people to the Meijer Express stores that were open 24/7. In particular, categories like propane and firewood sales were up double digits as people scrambled for those things for outdoor activities, and Meijer certainly credited that to an increase in outdoor living during the pandemic. And of course, we mentioned that sales increase in terms of grills. Of course, propane sales will be up if grill sales are up. But both propane and firewood, you look, once again, we talked about northern climates, warming tools for houses as well. Many generators, for example, run on propane if the electricity goes out, so there might have been an increased focus on that with so many people staying at home. Portable generators as well, so if they were getting out into the woods, using RVs and the like, you're looking at, again, propane being a key for those particular things. And one really odd tidbit from this release as we wrap up this story regarding Meijer's sales over the last 12 months, scratch-off and weekly lotto sales were up over 25% at both regular stores and express locations during the last 12 months. Not something we've covered on the Retail Focus podcast, but of course, stores getting a cut of that revenue coming in. And so obviously, this is a little bit of a windfall for Meijer that might have been unexpected. When you go back and look at lottery sales during the pandemic, there's an AP story that was released last May that noted lotto sales were way up, some places as much as 75%, for example, in Oklahoma. This trend appeared to continue well into the pandemic, at least for Meijer, noting that lotto sales are still very strong, largely been attributed to casinos being closed or people avoiding casinos by those state lottery reps that you see quoted over the past year. In Oklahoma specifically, I mentioned the 75% increase in lotto sales there. Casinos, a major, major industry in Oklahoma, so with many of them shutting down during the early days of the pandemic, of course, people then turn to spending their money on lottery tickets. It's also a theory that people had more disposable income in certain income groups and so wanted a way to kind of use that disposable income if they couldn't be using it on travel or entertainment or the like. Now, which theory is perfectly correct? I'm not sure. It's probably a combination of multiple of them. But once again, Meijer's wheelhouse, you look where those stores are located, it's a fair amount of stores in areas where casinos take up residence or areas adjacent to where casinos take up residence that might have been shut down. But still, a positive sign for Meijer and maybe other retailers as well. We really don't hear a lot of retailers talk about lotto sales or lotto sales kickbacks, but it's good to know that Meijer is seeing those increases as we head into 2021. So, coming up after this break, we'll be joined by Anthony Welter. Anthony is the vice chairman at Deloitte LLP, once again their U.S. consumer industry leader. He'll join us to talk about the latest data from Global State of Consumer Tracker that they released, and he'll join us to discuss various things that retailers could or perhaps should be doing as anxiety levels decrease among consumers. Some days it's hard to believe we've been in pandemic retail conditions for over 13 months now. Others, of course, it seems like it's been an eternity. Regardless, though, we're starting to see an easing of consumer anxiety somewhat and some shopper optimism on the horizon as vaccines continue to be rolled out, particularly to the U.S. population at a torrid pace. Here to discuss what sentiment looks like globally amongst consumers and to look back at the past 13 months from a data perspective is Anthony Welter, Vice Chairman at Deloitte LLP and their U.S. consumer industry leader. Anthony, welcome to the podcast today.
Well, thanks for having me, Trent.
So the most recent Global State of the Consumer Tracker was released in late March. It gives a little bit of reason for optimism, at least based on consumer sentiment, as I kind of alluded to. What were some of the findings regarding the consumer's sense of security, maybe returning for the first time since last February, not only in the U.S., but worldwide?
Yeah, we measure consumer sense of security with a couple different measures. One is the anxiety level of consumers, and the other one is sort of we're measuring feeling safe to do something in the marketplace. And so I'll start with maybe the anxiety level. You know, since vaccine rollouts, the overall trend appears to be improving as we'd expect. You know, consumers continue to navigate uncertainties such as protocols for vaccinated and unvaccinated people, levels of reopening, et cetera. But they're starting to see the light at the end of the tunnel and feeling closer to a return to normal. In our March 3rd edition of the survey, anxiety levels declined by 10% or more in the United States, United Kingdom, and Japan, while they remain higher in places like India and South Africa. But anxiety, it has eased slightly there too as well. So in our most recent survey last week, a number of countries in Europe, Poland, Italy, France, Netherlands, and Germany, as well as in India, Chile, and South Africa, have a positive trend in net anxiety, which has softened somewhat as rollouts progress, but at a slower pace and newer variants become more prevalent in those areas. But again, the U.S., South Korea, Australia continue to improve. COVID itself remains the number one driver of anxiety, but it isn't the only thing. We're seeing financial concern may replace COVID as a driver of anxiety as the health crisis sort of abates. And we're already seeing that in the U.S., where while COVID is at about 49%, very close to it is anxiety over financial concerns. You know, I mentioned the second measure being feeling safe to do things. And globally, consumers are feeling safer to go to the store, about 54% in late March, versus 46% in early February and 35% this time last year in April 2020. So more are also feeling safe in one-on-one services, such as getting a haircut, staying in a hotel, and going to a restaurant. So naturally, it varies by country, and with China and Australia leading the way, while Japan and Chile remain still the most cautious.
And that's exactly something I wanted to hit on, because sometimes it's about the overarching anxiety, or as you mentioned, financial insecurity, but also it's about how comfortable customers are in terms of doing things. And I know at least for the U.S., we've seen numbers from Deloitte really jump in terms of comfortability, in terms of retail stores, in terms of restaurants over the past couple of months. What are we seeing on that front, at least U.S. specific numbers, as far as how comfortable people are with getting out, with shopping or using other services?
Yeah, well, look, I'd say a couple of things. You know, we're seeing better numbers in the U.S., for example, with COVID anxieties decreasing. We're seeing a significant increase in those who are more comfortable, like, you know, fully vaccinated. You know, people obviously are more comfortable than those who aren't. In fact, you know, we expect to have about 70% of the population in the U.S. vaccinated in the next 6 months. That's going to drive a lot of these numbers that we'll share. But I would say people tend to be creatures of habit. And with the pandemic, we've all adopted, you know, several new behaviors. You know, the pandemic also accelerated a number of trends. So in e-commerce, buy online, pick up in stores, working from home. And overall, consumers are telling us to expect a continuation of that at-home trend, either, you know, born out of hesitancy to fully get back out there or the lifestyle choices that they've chosen. During the pandemic, consumers learned to be better cooks. They've invested in new appliances to cook with, home gyms. There will be more consumers working from home, we know that, after the pandemic than before. In fact, the new data suggests that the work-from-home trend will be almost 30% greater than it was pre-pandemic. So, you know, consumers have learned how convenient sort of the online shopping experience can be for delivery and for pickup for categories they wouldn't have previously considered, such as groceries. So as excited as we know people are to get back out there, life is likely to be more home-centered, at least in the midterm.
I wanted to touch on some of those numbers, particularly as they pertain to e-commerce, because I believe during the March Global State of the Consumer Tracker, 50% of consumers surveyed noted that they plan to do more shopping online than they did in 2019 pre-pandemic. But the interesting thing to me is that 15% said they'll actually be doing less than they did pre-pandemic, which I think, obviously, it's not a huge amount, 15%, but certainly runs counter to what we hear and what we are seeing as far as that movement towards e-commerce. What are some insights Deloitte might have about why consumers fall into each category, whether they're planning to do more shopping online than 2009, or maybe even backtracking to less?
Yeah, so for consumers who plan to shop online more post-pandemic, convenience and assortment are sort of the key drivers, right? In a way, consumers have become the merchant and key stakeholder. Within a few clicks, sitting on the couch, they can source the product that they want at the price they want and that they find reasonable and have it either delivered to their doorstep or pick it up in the store. So older consumers had been, before now, resistant to online commerce, and but forced to doing it during the pandemic, they've really found they actually like it. And so a trust in the channel has grown, both in that cohort as well as more broadly, for those who maybe had accepted it more broadly before. And so, you know, many of us who were forced to try buy online, pick up in the store for categories where we may have been hesitant before, like grocery shopping for fresh food and vegetables, are now more willing to do it. The experience has been positive. You know, the willingness to pay a premium for convenience has also remained high in the data that we see and really steady throughout the pandemic, but what convenience really means may have changed over time. They may kind of come to e-commerce originally for the convenience in regards to avoiding, you know, safety concerns, health concerns. Now they wanted to avoid, frankly, going out to shop and potentially exposing themselves to the virus was a major concern. But over the course of the pandemic, that reason has changed and they found reasons to stick with it. As you mentioned, though, there's this 15% who may be less likely to shop the way they used to during the pandemic. There'll be some consumers that will, in fact, use it less. These consumers are those that are typically maybe more, I'll talk about risk with you as well, but they enjoy human contact and are very committed to getting back out there. And what we see them doing is frequenting neighborhood businesses. You know, also the return to work may make it easier for some to shop in the store again the way they used to. They're two reasons. One, it's convenient. Stop by if they're out already. But two, they're worried that they won't be able to get back in time for delivery. And then finally, you know, e-commerce requires, you know, a premium in the form of slightly higher prices, service fees, and even tipping. And several customers who were going to leave the pandemic worse off financially may see e-commerce as something that they find less affordable than in 2019. So that 15% really sort of makes up that sort of sentiment cohort.
That actually leads me right into my next question, because you talked about a little bit of a premium sometimes associated with e-commerce, especially you think about groceries and e-commerce. We've seen somewhat of a barbell situation regarding financial conditions coming out of the pandemic. Some consumers, according to your data, ratcheting up discretionary spending. Others, as you mentioned earlier, in terms of anxiety, they're just worried about making the monthly rent or paying the monthly mortgage. What were some of the various findings regarding both ends of the spectrum as far as who has money to spend and who feels most comfortable spending that money?
Yeah, I think we're clearly experiencing a K-shaped recovery. You know, higher and middle-income consumers have managed to save during the pandemic. Meanwhile, you know, lower-income consumers have been profoundly impacted and will emerge from the pandemic much worse off financially. So when you consider some of the statistics that we're gathering today, you know, 6 in 10 consumers are spending the same or more than they make in income each month. And for consumers 18 to 34, they're 2.5 times more likely than those over 54 to say that they're doing that. So you can start to get a feel for, you know, the stakeholders and the constituents that are impacted. 4 in 10 are concerned about their credit card balances, and the same number are concerned about the savings accounts balances as they have to chisel away at that. And then finally, 3 in 10 are concerned about making the upcoming payments. Again, concern is the highest among the under 55 cohort. But that said, we're kind of all tired of our own four walls, and travel intentions are up for domestic flights, private rentals, rail trips, car rentals, cruises. all travel-related expectations are higher. In fact, 7 in 10 in the U.S. expect to spend more time on travel in the next 4 weeks, while about a third are going to put off travel until after the pandemic. But you start to get a sense for how financial pressures are impacting, but you know, there is this pent-up demand in the marketplace.
You mentioned the intent to potentially spend more on travel over the next 4 weeks. Deloitte has a great interactive tool on the website where you can kind of check in more or less month-by-month data regarding state of the consumer. And one of those categories is intent to spend more over the next 4 weeks. And when you break it down, we're seeing less of an intent to purchase more furnishings, as you mentioned, the four walls, more of an intent for groceries, travel, that type of thing. What are some of the spend trends in terms of where these categories are getting that share of wallet from here as customers look towards the next 4 to 8 weeks?
You know, again, when you look at spending intentions, they continue to remain strong. So 8 in 10 consumers plan to spend more on apparel and restaurants. I mentioned 7 in 10 on travel over the next 4 weeks. That's a category that has ticked up considerably. I'd say that the interesting behavior, I mentioned this earlier, is that we will continue to see a significant amount of discretionary spend occurring in the home. This creation of this at-home economy is real, and cocooning will likely continue. And so, you know, when you think about what people will spend money on and where they'll spend money, that home is still a great deal of where the spend is going to occur.
As I mentioned earlier, we saw this big jump in terms of people feeling safer, engaging in in-person retail activities, going to the store, especially in the U.S. We saw massive jumps in numbers over the last couple of months. But how are consumers currently feeling? What's the current state of the consumer in terms of getting out, engaging in some of those in-person activities?
Yeah, we have experienced a real uptick in consumers feeling safe to do more and more activities in the recent weeks. On a global level, with about 18 countries in the mix, it's sometimes hard to see as scores, you know, tend to revert back to the mean, but there we see about 5 to 7% jumps. In the U.S., it's more dramatic. Again, we're seeing about 10% jumps in categories like feeling safe to go to the store that are reaching, you know, survey record highs at this point. Similar highs are being reached for in-person services and activities like going to a restaurant. And 1 in 3 even feel safe attending large personal events or in-person events. But we recognize that not everyone feels the same, and we're doing some new risk profiling in this space. So we're categorizing individuals as low, medium, and high risk tolerant. And we're doing that by measuring the number of activities that they feel safe doing in the marketplace. And so that low risk tolerant category is still the greatest individual category at about 48%. And these folks only agree to participate in about 2 activities. They only believe that those are safe. The medium risk tolerant individuals are comfortable with 3 to 4 activities. And then the high risk tolerant are 5+. So those with 3 or more, where they believe 3 or more activities are safe, are about 52% versus 48% for low risk. But even it's still pretty high. The risk defined groups will likely change over time as the vaccination levels increase. But right now, the low risk group is both older, but with a younger cohort under 25. And they're more likely to be retired or unemployed and lower income. It's just an interesting way that we continue to look at the data.
So how are you consulting some of the retailers to respond, or how should retailers maybe respond to some of these data inputs that they're getting?
We're really seeing retailers, you know, consider store design. You know, for example, as consumers come in for groceries and prescriptions in certain stores, you know, how do they make personal care easier and safer in that environment? We saw that during the pandemic, but it continues to be a science that a lot of our retail clients are studying. Also, you know, the continued importance of omnichannel will be critical, and encouraging really BOPIS, so they might add to the basket when they get to the store. So how do you make a buy online, pick up in store experience one that also includes buying other things once they arrive, you know, to pick up their packages? So retailers are really doing a few things really important. They're studying the art of connecting with customers, and I think that's critically important, and offering opportunities to, you know, improve the overall experience. They're also using trust as a guiding principle. You know, trust in overall institutions have declined, but it's critical to success. In fact, you know, 85% of consumers that we call choose trusted brands over others, compared to with only 60% who select brands they don't trust. So trust has a clear impact on financial performance, and investing in continuing to build mutual trust with consumers can certainly help ensure that they come along with you on the journey, even when the inevitable shocks occur. So trust is becoming a critical point. They should also be transparent and explain the safety measures that they're putting in place. They really need to be authentic in their brand positioning and empathetic to the consumer's situation and aspirations, how they want to interact. For luxury in particular, brands need to be conscious of the K-shaped recovery I mentioned earlier and how, you know, their consumers want to show up in a context where some people will be exiting the pandemic really in a worse financial condition. So being empathetic to that situation is important. And showing deep empathy for consumers and employees overall. We know that Wall Street and Main Street have experienced the pandemic very differently. So retailers need to reconnect with and evaluate their investment in their customers and employees to really better understand the experiences and needs of that population. So we continue to see our clients and retailers, top performing retailers, really study the data and make data-driven decisions about how they're going to customize the experience for the consumers.
And one final note I wanted to wrap up on is that we talked to Rod Sines with Deloitte regarding holiday shopping and four different types of holiday shoppers that we really saw develop during the holiday season. And I know one of the things that you guys have spotted is that there's really four distinct consumer behaviors emerging as we work on our way out of the pandemic. What are these four kind of consumer behaviors or four groups of consumers and what characterizes each?
Yeah, the four emerging personas coming out of the pandemic are the stockpiler, the convenience seeker, the bargain hunter, and the socially conscious shopper. So when you think about the stockpiler, they want more than they need at home. And that's about 53% today in the data. The convenience seeker is okay with spending more on convenience, and that's about 40% of the population. That's what they would represent. And the bargain hunter would say that if they found a good deal on a non-essential item, they'd buy it today. And that statistic is around 57%. And then finally, the socially conscious shopper, and really there are two statistics that we're tracking there, they're more likely, they source more locally going forward. That's about 39%. And they purchase from brands that responded well in a socially conscious way. And that's about 45%. So you can see where individuals would move between these four personas with obviously ease, and you can imagine yourself in each of these categories at different points in time. But again, the stockpiler, convenience seeker, bargain hunter, and socially conscious shopper are the four that are emerging.
As always, great insights from Deloitte, and I highly recommend everyone get out there, check out the interactive State of the Consumer Tracker. A lot of great data on there. But once again, Anthony, thank you for joining us today on the podcast.
Thanks again, Trent. We appreciate the time.
As always, we may have a position in or against companies we discuss on the podcast. Do not invest in stocks solely on the input of the podcast hosts.
We thank Anthony once again for joining us, and we look forward to more data by way of Deloitte as the year presses on. Well, we move to a sad story, an unfortunate story coming by way of BJ's Wholesale Club this week. And this is something that we cover on the podcast simply because it's unfortunate when something like this happens. Of course, happened about a year and a half ago with Ollie's Bargain Outlet as well. But BJ's Wholesale Club CEO Lee Delaney, we get word this week, has passed away at the age of 49. He was seen as one of the up-and-coming retail leaders in the entirety of the retail industry, and shocked, absolutely shocked everyone that is involved with BJ's and in the retail industry as a whole. Now, I could say I'm looking ahead to see how BJ's will react to this, but they did have a succession plan in place. They're going to announce more permanent roles within the front office here within the next few weeks. But Delaney had served as president and also their CEO since February of 2019. He oversaw a period of growth for the company. Of course, you're looking at a company that is very newly public. His role that he vacates is taken over by Robert Eddy, who had been the EVP and also chief financial officer. He moves into that CEO role. That's likely to be a permanent appointment for him. And then they'll look at backfilling, of course, some of the open roles that he'll leave behind as he moves into that main role. So again, our sincere condolences for Lee Delaney's family, everyone that worked with him, certainly, at BJ's. Anytime something like that happens, it really does shake a retail organization. So we certainly wish the best for them in terms of the grieving process, more so than how BJ's will perform financially over the next couple of years. But I do think Lee Delaney certainly left the company in really, really good shape. And this is a retailer, again, that recent IPO sales, of course, going up by leaps and bounds, looking at expansion throughout the East Coast. And so it, once again, he left them in a pretty good position going forward. So hate to leave, certainly, on a sad note here on the Retail Focus podcast, but we did want to mention that because that certainly took us by surprise, certainly shocked us here on the podcast as well. Well, coming up next week, we'll be joined by Jim Johnson. He's the head of WorldPay Merchant Solutions at FIS. And we're going to talk about a couple of different reports FIS has produced in the last several months, the Global Payments Report and the Generation Pay Report. Basically, we're going to look at how people are paying at retailers and how retailers should make decisions surrounding that, as well as trends and projections for the next 5 years based on FIS's numbers. Again, they get a massive amount of payments information, and so you're looking at certainly not only a subject matter expert in terms of FIS, but maybe the foremost payment solutions operator in the world today. So a lot of data coming up in next week's interview. We hope you'll subscribe and stick around for that. And in the interim, I hope everyone has a great rest of their week.
This has been the Retail Focus Podcast. For more, visit our website at retailfocuspodcast.com and subscribe on iTunes or Stitcher. Follow us on Twitter at Retail Podcast.